fourth commandment in the Ten Commandments from Deuteronomy 5 or Exodus 20. What's the fourth one? Like I sort of give you a hint just then, right? Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy is the fourth one. Last night I tested my children, who are in the audience, and all four of my children, I now have two sons, for whom I'm very grateful. We tested them all last night. What's the fourth commandment? Well, they got nine of them. This was the one they missed, and then Caleb got it right after a sizable pause. So I've been thinking about this for a long time. Nathan had an excellent lesson a few weeks ago on the third commandment. Remember the third commandment? Third commandment? Don't bear the name of the Lord in vain. Actually, it says don't take the name of the Lord in vain, but Nathan, I think, did an excellent job of demonstrating that may mean to bear. He expertly did Nathan describe how this commandment affects us. So are we accountable to the third commandment? I think Nathan did a pretty good job. It's not that the third commandment's in the Old Testament. It's are we going to bear the name of the Lord in vain? And so is the third commandment, if you will, applicable today? The third commandment's applicable today. Mind of God, we're seeing this. Not because it's in the old law, but because we should be bearing the name of God. So the Old Testament, the law of Moses, the Word of God, it's been preserved in all these latter days from the beginning until now. Here it is. To show the beginning, the Old Testament, the beginning of how God regulates his people. That's what the Old Testament is for. In math, and this is a decent analogy, it breaks down in some areas. In math, we start out as children, and when we get into math, doing arithmetic, counting. 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 = 4. But by the time you get to college, if you're going to study engineering or physics, the arithmetic, do you throw that away? But no. But the calculus becomes important, and it's a better way. Luke is Tutoro is a new engineer. I've been an engineer for a while. Calculus is easier to do things when you know how to do it as opposed to doing it the hard way with arithmetic. That's the regulation of engineering. And so we have to understand this basic arithmetic before we can get to algebra and geometry and trigonometry and calculus and even further advanced math. But unlike childhood arithmetic textbooks, the Old Testament actually has the arithmetic in there, but it also gives us glimpses of what's to come. And the Scriptures even deals with this. We see Abraham, he saw things afar. Not everything, not with clarity, because they weren't ready for calculus. When Abraham left his family and went toward Egypt, God's law, his regulation of his people during the Old Testament, is the basis for how we are regulated today. It's the basis for it. It's the foundation. So how many here, especially those who, let's say, grew up in the church, I'm not among those. I did not grow up, if you will. I was not a child with parents who were members of the Lord's body, but many of you were. My wife certainly was. How many here have been told that you somehow acquired this fact that, well, we're accountable to nine of the Ten Commandments, but that fourth one we're not accountable to because, well, Jesus or Paul or James or John never really recited the fourth commandment anywhere. Any of y'all ever heard this? You know, you got it. All the other nine are okay, but it's that remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. That's the Deuteronomy 5 version that we just don't do that anymore. But the other nine, you know, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't bear false witness, because they were recited somehow. Have you ever studied that fact? I know some of you have heard that. Now, you're not all nodding your head at me, but I know some of you have heard that. That, well, we're accountable to the other nine because we see them in the Scriptures. We don't see number four in there. Let's go through some of this. Take a look at this. Had I a slide, we'd be going through the Ten Commandments. We know these. What's the first one? The first commandment. Well, you shall have no other gods before me. That's sort of it in a nutshell. Where was this recited in the New Testament like that? Well, you maybe are thinking of Matthew 22 in the context of the test the Pharisees were giving him. And Jesus said in response to what the greatest commandment, love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Where's that from? That's not from Deuteronomy 5, which is the second giving of the Ten Commandments, nor is that from Exodus 20. It's actually from Deuteronomy 6, but okay. Love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. Love the Lord. Love that. That makes sense. What's the second commandment? About idols, right? Or not doing that. Essentially, again, using the Deuteronomy thing, you shall not make for yourself an idol. I'm paraphrasing that just for time's sake. Where is that recited? Well, it's recited in a lot of places in one form or another. John says, dear children, keep yourselves from idols. And we'll get to the 10th commandment in a second where it's dealt with in a different way. But it's not really recited. It's building on these things. Third commandment. Well, we just talked about the third commandment, right? Not taking or bearing the Lord's name in vain. Well, James sort of says, don't swear, and there's a certain amount of emptiness about that, about using the name of God in an incorrect way. But I think where Nathan was going is correct, not bearing the name of the Lord in vain. Where is that mentioned? We see the whole New Testament is about bearing the name of Christ. We'll deal with the fourth commandment later. What, fifth through the ninth commandments, oh, the do nots, the simple do nots, right? Remember in Matthew 19, the rich young ruler so they're sort of recited there, but what's the context there? The context is you're trying to check boxes, young man. What's the real point of that section of Scripture? Give yourself to God. That's the point. Remember, why did he leave sort of unhappy? What's the rich part? And he had to give up everything, right? What was the point? It wasn't, he was taking care of the do not murder, do not steal, do not commit adultery part, but he was having trouble with the heart part, the heart part. And then finally, the last commandment, do not covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's house, your neighbor's stuff. And of course, Paul, this is where idolatry sort of comes up again, which is the point, arithmetic versus calculus. Consider your members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, dead to passion, evil desire, and greed, which is what? Idolatry, right? From Colossians 3. So really, when we look at the context of the Ten Commandments, the Exodus 20, Deuteronomy 5 stuff, and then the recitations that you probably some of you in your head are going, yeah, I learned that all nine, but not remember the Sabbath because we don't have to do that anymore. Well, if these other nine seem to be applicable in one form or another, maybe we should study this one a little bit more and make sure we understand what we're doing. Maybe there is an aspect of remembering the Sabbath that we need to be sure we put on our list, kind of like bearing the name or refraining from bearing the name of the Lord in vain. God expects more from us than mere arithmetic. Now, the fact of the matter is that also in Colossians, just prior to about all this amounting to idolatry, evil deeds and greed, and listen, the Old Testament, the ordinances of the Old Testament, what did Paul say happened to them? They were nailed to the cross, right? So we have to rectify the ordinance of the Old Testament nailed to the cross versus what he told the Pharisees. Love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. That's where'd that come from? That comes from Leviticus 19. We have to rectify what Jesus is saying, the calculus part, versus what God was saying, the arithmetic part. Yes, the arithmetic has been nailed to the cross. We're done with that foundation now. We are relieved from the ordinances of the Old Testament. That is a true statement. We don't sacrifice animals anymore. But do we sacrifice? We better be doing that. We better be sacrificing self now. That's different from an animal. Why did they have... If you go back and read through the Old Testament, how many animals died? And there must have been a river of blood coming out of the temple. Why? Why was that such a big deal? It was the arithmetic part. We need it. It was the Old Testament. Those ordinances were showing the sin of the people. And so what do we need? We need something to be better than that. Well, maybe there is a reason we need to observe the Sabbath. What does Sabbath mean? That's a transliterated word. It actually is transliterated from Hebrew. What does it mean in one simple word? We sung about it already, actually, this morning. We're going to sing about it again. It means rest. Where did it come from? Where did this idea of a rest, a Sabbath, come from? Well, it came from what happened on the seventh day back in Genesis 1, right? What happened on the seventh day? Day 1, light. Day 7, rest. Did God quit? No, that was a rest. Is God still working? God's still working. It was a way to demonstrate what for the people? God set up the rest, the Sabbath. Man was not created to have the rest. Man, God created the rest for man. What were men to do? What were the people of God to do? They were commanded this in the fourth commandment, and there were plenty of other ordinances related to the Sabbath. I mean, right, couldn't go gather food and gather in the wilderness. What was the point of the Sabbath, the rest? What was the point? To think about the things of God, to observe that He cares for the, and to demonstrate that you can have a day off and God's still in charge. He's still working. He's still running. So it's not about the, and this is where the passage from Matthew 12, that same section of Scripture is repeated in Mark and Luke as well. Pretty important to note. When Danny read from Matthew 12, the whole point was, well, the disciples were hungry. And what did Jesus do? He was caring for them, that whole same passage. How did that passage that Danny read to us end? What did Jesus do on the Sabbath, much to the chagrin of the Pharisees? He healed. He took care of His person. Because the Sabbath is a day to recognize that God heals. So obviously God did not completely disengage. In Genesis 1 on day 7, well, then there became a day 8. And here we go again, and this has been around for a long time now. This one day per week was ordinanced, was set in part for the children of God in their arithmetic age, their childhood age, the people of God, so we can see, to rest, to think about the care, because they were going to be able to gather enough food on the sixth day of the week. God will take care of them. The Sabbath was created by God for man, not the other way around. Man was not created to check the Sabbath box. That was not the point. God created the rest for man. For man to quit trying to work it out, to work out their own salvation, and consider the actual work of God. Let's do a little bit of reading. The New Testament actually has quite a bit to say about the Sabbath. We're going to do some reading here from Hebrews 3 and 4. And if you'd like, you can start turning and read with me. I can tell my voice is starting to go south on me. We will keep this up, even if I have to whisper. Start in verse 12. So Hebrews 3, verse 12, we'll read a little bit into chapter 4. It's important to note, this is, again, the one who I think, and Steve Bonk quoted this because I don't like calling it the writer of Hebrews because I think this was a spoken exhortation. I've always heard Steve say the exhorter of Hebrew. That's a good, it's just a word we don't use very often. So whoever it was that spoke it said in verse 12 as he's continuing to talk to the Hebrews who would know a thing or two about the Sabbath. Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God, but encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm until the end, while it is said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me. For who provoked them when they'd heard? Indeed, did not all those who came out of Egypt, led by Moses? And with whom was he angry for 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose bodies fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest? But to those who were disobedient? So, we see that they were not able to enter because of unbelief. Therefore, let us fear if, while a promise remains of entering his rest, any one of you may have come short of it. For indeed, we have had good news preached to us, just as they also, but the word they heard did not profit them because it was not united by faith in those who heard. For we who have believed, enter that rest. Just as he said, as I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although his works were finished from the foundation of the world, for he said somewhere concerning the seventh day, obviously Genesis, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this passage, they shall not enter my rest. Therefore, since it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly had good news preached to them failed to enter because of disobedience, he again fixes a certain day. Today, saying through David after so long a time, just as had been said before, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, he would not have spoken of another day after that. So there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God, for the one who has entered his rest. For the one who has entered his rest has himself also rested from his works, as God did from his. Therefore, let us be diligent to enter that rest, so that no one will fall through following the same example of disobedience. Did Moses enter the promised land? He fell short, didn't he? In fact, one of the songs we sang had to do with that very matter. Remember the whole striking the rock thing? Waters at Meribah? A whole bunch of the people of God failed to enter that promised land rest. Joshua brought them there. That's what the exhorter of Hebrews just said. But many fell short. Chapter 4, verse 3. For we who have believed, enter, present tense, for we who have believed, enter that rest. The conclusion of this 95th Psalm is actually verse 8, for if Joshua had given them rest, he would not have spoken of another day, God would not have spoken of another day after that. That's, I think, coming from Psalm 95. There is some other rest, and the exhorter of Hebrews is telling us, if we believe, he's talking to us, he's talking to Hebrews, this is designed for us to see. There remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. Today, there's a Sabbath rest. Are we in it? I hope so. Now, the one of the first songs Nathan led had to do with the final rest. Fair enough to talk about that. There are many analogies of analogies. My question is, are we resting? What would we be resting from? Our whole year is being spent on these very things. What should we be resting from? Well, who's done the work around here? God has. What has he done the work for? What has he done? He's saved us. He's redeemed us. What are we going to do about that? That's the point. What are we going to do about that? We don't have to work out our own salvation that way. We have to work out our salvation with fear and trembling through what? Through belief. God has worked out our salvation. I can enter this rest if I am a person of God. There remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God, Hebrews 4:9. I can enter, not in some future, when I die, I'd like to go to heaven, but rest is now. Are we going to take advantage of being a believer of the living God? Verses chapter 3, 12, take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. If I'm obedient, it says here in chapter 4, verse 6, for he said somewhere, God rested on, and again, and they shall not enter my rest. Why? Verse 6, therefore, since it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly had good news preached to them failed to enter, because of why? Because they didn't obey. This rest that we have, we don't have to figure out salvation. The ordinances of the Old Testament, it's real hard to do calculus if all you know how to do is addition and subtraction. They weren't going to be able to figure it out with that. It required God to work all that out. We have the basis of it here. We have the rest. We have this Sabbath. For us today, what is this rest? What should I be ceasing working toward? I should be ceasing to try and figure out what I need to do to be saved. It's been here. Here it is. Believe. Obey. Be a person of God. This is not an earthly rest any more than God's kingdom, Jesus' kingdom, he's king, is an earthly kingdom. It's a spiritual rest. We even hit on this in class today. Brent, you were talking about the poor of spirit. Are we poor of spirit? I hope not. I hope we're rich of spirit. Why? We've entered the rest. This is the rest that comes because I recognize that God has worked my own salvation. Now rest. This is the rest that comes because I've put to death the person of sin that I am. This is grasping the eternal life that I have now. By belief, by obedience. So let's go back to the fourth commandment. Observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. Should I observe the Sabbath, the rest? I mean, that's everything, isn't it? Of course I should. Should I keep it holy? Holy is an interesting word, right? We think of holy sometimes as being pious or religious. It's really not what it means. What does it really mean? Means separate from what? From the common. What got Esau, Jacob's twin brother, his elder twin brother, into one heap of trouble in Hebrews 12? Well, we know what got from book of Genesis, but what does the same exhorter of Hebrews say in chapter 12 about Esau? Pursue peace with all men, Hebrews 12. Verse 14, pursue peace with all men and the sanctification without which no one, the sanctification, similar word to holy, by the way, the sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many be defiled, that there be no sexually immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. Got godless person? That's profane. That's what that means. Profane, making something common. What did Esau have? He had his birthright. What did he do? He made it as common as a bowl of stew. And what do we see after the fact? The inspired word of the writer or exhorter of Hebrews say, it made him profane, godless, unholy, the opposite of holy. So, should I observe the Sabbath? Should I keep it holy? Indeed, I should. Otherwise, my salvation, if I consider that to be as common as a bowl of stew, well, that's a problem. So the whole point of this is it's helpful to go through the Old Testament and understand the arithmetic. There, in my opinion, and I think my opinion is borne out by many others, doesn't really matter, the Old Testament is here for a reason. It wasn't preserved for us to just have it. The Old Testament is there to, well, discipline us, to provide us the foundation of how God regulates us today. I am absolutely going to observe the fourth commandment. I'm going to observe the rest to which I have been granted this privilege. I'm going to keep it holy. I'm not merely going to check the box earthly and not do work on Saturday. That's the seventh day. That's not the point, right? That's what Danny read from Matthew 12. That's not the point at all. In fact, God said on many occasions in the Old Testament, I'm not interested in your sacrifice. What am I interested in? I'm interested in your heart. I am going to treasure the salvation today. I'm going to observe this ability for me to rest. I'm going to recall and consider God's work that He did so that I can enter that rest and be in that rest today. I'm going to keep myself separate from the profane, from the common. I am going to observe the fourth commandment. Not because it's the fourth commandment in Exodus 12 or Deuteronomy 5. It's because God has said, I've worked this out for you. Believe and obey, be my person, and you have entered, you shall enter. That's what I'm going to do. Take care, brethren, that there not be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God, but encourage each other day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. See and fear. We have a promise remaining. His rest is upon us. We need to have that fear, that awesome respect of the one who worked it out today, not tomorrow. Today, let us fear if, while a promise remains of entering his rest, the promise remains, any one of you may seem to have come short of it. We indeed have had the good news preached to us, just as they also, but the word they heard did not profit them, because it was not united by faith in those who heard. Today is that day. For each of us, consider the value of this rest that we have. Observe it, treasure it. Keep it separate, holy, sanctified. Nathan's going to lead us in an excellent song, an old song, a song that I think well describes exactly the point. I encourage each of you to read the Old Testament, to consider things that maybe you didn't really know why. Why have we always been told, or why is that statement, okay, well, all 9 of the 10 are okay, but not this one. Why is that the case? Read the Scriptures. Understand God. Be a believer, a person of God. Enter His rest.